grace and faith were used on us, not by us.
The gospel of grace.
You are the thing that was in the mind of God.
The gospel of peace.
This plan was put together by God and Jesus before the creation of anything else.
That was Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for Friday, July 13, 2018, broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Eva, Alabama, where we say that a text without a context is a pretext for a subtext. But right now, from Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, with more consistent, persistent, repetitive CPR of the gospel, is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Mr. Williams, how are you today?
I am doing very good on this fine day here in South Florida. And how are you, Mr. Donald Allen Beresford Bartlett?
Compared to what?
Not compared to anything, just how are you? Well, Paul said he that compares himself to somebody else is a fool, so why should I lead you into being a fool?
I don't believe that you said that correctly at all, because Paul would have said, he that compareth himself to a fooleth, wouldeth. See, but you didn't say that. So what you're doing is quoting out of something other than the King James Version. And for that alone, really, you ought to be castigated.
He diddeth indeed.
That's it?
That's all you're getting out of me.
Oh, boy. Well, I guess it's straight into the show today. And this week we got a new comment on the post, Name Above All Names. I think I prefer Glenn's title. Yeah, what's in a name?
Yeah.
But anyway, Name Above All Names is probably going to get, well, I don't know if it'll get more Google hits or not. And that's what we entitle the shows for. We want to get Google hits. And so I usually use artwork that comes from Google Images, and if I can. And if not, I just make my own up. But Name Above All Names. And it's from Rob Crazy Keys, who has this to say: I do not need to understand much about the Trinity. You should, Rob, because you might be part of it, you know. Just a thought. But anyway, I do not need to understand much about how my car works. I hit the key and I drive. Good enough for me. Knowing that myself and my loved ones are with the Lord when we pass is the gold. Christianity avoids the truth. Gee, that's true, isn't it? Instead of 80% of the teachings being about possessing wealth from tithing and that God can be your personal vending machine, most of Christianity kind of views God as this cosmic Santa Claus. And yet, he's really a cosmic Santa Claus with a bipolar problem, to be honest. Word of Faith ministry comes to mind, he says. Yep, you're right, mate. This ministry preaches the gospel, which purposes to set our hearts free and make us secure, just like Jesus did when he was on earth. Centuries of Christianity and not one severed limb grown out.
Mm-hmm.
Who still supports these frauds and why? To somewhat quote Mike many years back, being kind is more special than fill in the blank, riches, knowledge, whatever. Dining out or at a movie, I'd rather sit next to the kind person. Rob Crazy Keys.
I got a text this week on that same show, Don, and it was from Brad and Holly Wilson.
They're nice people.
They are indeed. And he said, just finished this week's PowerCast. Thank you guys. Got saved again. Heard something for the first time again. You know what I mean. Not sure if I did any good, but I spoke in tongues for about 15 seconds. And so my response was, wow, I'd like to hear what you heard. And thanking them for their continued support. Brad and Holly are avid supporters of the gospel revolution in Mike Williams' ministries. And his response and me asking, telling him I would really like to hear what he heard. Let me try. Of course, this is text, and sometimes texts don't come through with accurate words, but I think I can do this. The only name that needed to be in the Book of Life was Jesus! Exclamation point. I believed, according to my upbringing, that my name was in the book. But what is so wonderful and such a gospel thing is that all are in the name of Jesus. Mike, I don't care what anyone has done. They don't deserve eternal punishment for things done in this flawed flesh.
Oh, I know some Presbyterians who could use a good dose of it.
And just hearing about the who was in the name of Jesus again was overwhelming. Any person that thinks someone deserves eternal punishment is just selfish and self-righteous.
A couple of Southern Baptists too, I reckon.
And that was from Brad and Holly Wilson. We really appreciate that. And again, he is given lots of thanks for sharing the gospel with him. And I told him I counted a great privilege and honor. It seems like it touched a lot of people's hearts to have that concept. And as Brad said, it's such a gospel concept, you know, that all is one and one is all. And so why should not this fit perfectly, that we only need one name in the Book of Life for everyone to be there, since everybody's there anyway?
A couple of brethren too, but no Methodists. I don't know any Methodists that should go to hell. What was that? Hello?
Oh, I don't know. Hello? Oh,
okay. Okay, it was like we used to say in the old days, smoking won't send you to hell, it'll just make you smell like you've been there.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Amen. 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 Oh, yeah.
Gee, there's so much we want to cover today, but I just want to remind you that we have some conferences coming up. Go to the front page of the website, www.gospelrevolution.com. In fact, you'll hear us say that a lot today, because we really think that you're missing you're missing a great deal on life if you don't know, and if you've never been to www.gospelrevolution. There, I had another excuse then. So we got some conferences coming up. Don't forget to go there. Every week you'll see our latest podcast. Every week you'll see our latest videos, our Bible study videos. And if you haven't seen one of those, then you really are missing out on life. If you go to the front page of www.gospelrevolution, you will discover that the conferences in Calgary this year, in this fall, is for the 14th, 15th, 16th of September. Wade Brewer will be there and Michael Williams will be there. And at this stage, believe that Michael is going to be contextually, that is verse by verse, teaching on the Book of Romans once again, and bringing out the stuff, the new stuff that he's discovered in the last couple of years. Is that right, Mike?
That is true. We are, I was sitting on the sofa doing some reading and research on some subject, who knows what, but I started just looking at the date. I saw down in the right-hand corner of my computer, my calendar. I thought, oh, let me pull up the calendar and see what's on it. And it's like, are you kidding me? This is July. August follows July, and September follows August.
Well, you had a good education up there in East Tennessee in the hills and hollers.
I began to realize 2 months until the Calgary conference. Oh, my gosh. So, yeah, it's barreling down on top of us. But I have information about the 2019 conference.
Oh, tell me about it.
Yeah.
2019?
in the 2019 conference, not the one coming up in September of 2018, but the 2019. And if this is able to be worked out, I just spoke with my dear friend, Sean Anson Smith, and he tells me that he is planning, he said he wants to, he said flying up, of course, would create many challenges to go to Calgary, but he really wants to come to a Calgary meeting. So he said, but you know, my son needs a cross-country vacation and what a lot of wonderful places to stop at along the way. You can give your son a wonderful education that exists all the way from Alabama to Calgary, Alberta, and your family enjoy the trip. I said, we can probably also supply you with some names of gospel revolutionaries you could stop and see along the way.
Mm-mm.
And so he's doing everything to begin to plan for this. He said it would take a year's planning for him to be able to make that trip. And I'm going to let Don fill you in on the just exactly the difficulties that Sean will have to face to make this trip and why he can't fly. I can tell you if Sean Anson Smith does wind up being there at this conference, the people are going to get a treat because he'll be one of our guest speakers if he's able to make it there.
Wow.
I was really excited that he would consider making the trip. I know that Sean is in a situation with his health that he really is packing everything he can into being a father, a husband, a teacher of the gospel. And Don, I know you understand that a bit more than I do, but I just love this guy. I really do. And he has become such a valuable part and an asset to the gospel, not just a valuable part of the gospel revolution and Mike Williams Ministries and to myself personally, but a very valuable asset in understanding and research. He has threaded some needles. He has put a tremendous amount of cartilage and joints and marrow to some of the teachings that I'd already done. And he's taught me some stuff, too. Now, as we invite people to try to make it to Calgary, can you explain to the folks, you've been there to visit, Sean, I've not had the privilege of doing that. Can you tell them what he would have to do to be able to travel there for this conference to and from, all the way from as far south as you can get in Alabama?
Yep, any further south, you need a life jacket.
And to go up and cross the border north of Montana and then to continue going up to Calgary. Could you tell the folks what experience that's going to be for this man and his family?
Well, the VA hospital has outfitted a van for him, and I had the privilege of riding in that van the other day with him in the passenger seat in the front. Barry Laney was driving, and this thing is a $30,000 van, US dollars, with another $30,000 worth of VA appointed fixtures so that he can actually drive himself around if he really wants to.
That's awesome.
It is awesome. For a man who is wheelchair-bound, incontinent, and has serious ulceration of his legs that gets daily visits. So he has people come in, thanks to the VA, the Veterans Hospital here in the USA, and they dress his wounds. His incontinence means that he wears, he wears diapers is what he wears.
Which he lets everybody know. I mean, this is not something that, you know, we're really speaking out of turn, because if he was here, he'd be telling you the same thing.
Yep. And just getting him in shorts. I mean, the other day when we were down there, had a shindig, he just drapes a towel across him because getting in and out of clothes, particularly legs,
right,
and is getting his butt into a pair of pants is just, I mean, that's an art form in itself. So he would have to get in his car, his son probably driving. They would drive however long he could drive, 100 miles, maybe 50 miles, before he needs a pit stop and a change possibly of dressings, certainly of a diaper. He would proceed that way all the way up to the border.
Yeah.
At which stage he would hope that the customs people didn't require him to get out of the vehicle, although he could, but it would be in a wheelchair. And all in all, mate, what he's talking about, and he did mention something about this to me. See, the problem is in a plane, you can't take your own wheelchair.
Yeah.
And his wheelchair is motorized and
right.
It's a big old chair too.
Yeah.
So he has to drive if he's going to make it there at all. And I don't know whether you want me to manipulate people, but because of my pastoral past, I will. If this guy can plan for Calgary, family, so can you. I remember when I was – the last couple of times I went up to Calgary with you, mate, I bitched and moaned about bloody being stuffed way back in cattle class.
Oh, my gosh. It was like talking to a princess sleeping with a pea under the mattress. Jesus Christ.
All right. That is great news, and I hope Sean makes it up there. And anything I can do to assist that, I will be doing. And in all of this, again, let me tell you that he is an active and consistent donor to the Gospel Revolution. He's only been associated with us, what, maybe a year or so, in which time he's come out of the depression that religion had put him into. He'd been a pastor. He was a Marine sergeant who had a dreadful accident on the side of a cliff, which has also been complicated by a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis. So, family, yeah, I don't mind using Sean. Sean won't mind me using him as a reason to give you a prod. Get yourselves up to Calgary. Calgary, let me tell you something. As somebody who loves nice cities, I mean, I could live in Hong Kong for the rest of my life. It would not bother me one bit. I could live there because it's just a lovely, lovely city. Singapore is another city, except the fact that you're swimming in your own sweat all the time. But Calgary is a pretty little city. It's so lovely. The mountains around there are decked out with snow. In the fall and in the spring, it's just gorgeous. You end up with these duck blue skies, beautiful cumulus clouds, and just the sun pouring down on you with this freshness in the a bite in the air. Family, get yourself up there. Grace Conferences is what you speak to the Calgary Carriage House Inn about to get the special discount. Come up and make our lives just that much more exciting by being near yourselves, because believe me, you will. You will.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. This coming September, we're encouraging you guys about. So to beat Sean there, you're going to have to get there this fall, because next year, unless there's been drastic situations evolve in his life, which, you know, Sean lives in a very precarious situation with his health, and he knows that his situation is continuing to degrade, and life is becoming with pretty much every month, definitely every year, is becoming more difficult to navigate physically. But one thing that has not become more difficult to navigate for him physically is mentally and emotionally. It seems, and I was telling him this in our conversation the other day, that it really does seem like that every, and this man has a list of real, none imagined, but all of these are very real extreme hardships that have happened during the course of his life and that he's dealing with right now. And it only seems to be squeezing out the very best that this man has to offer. And it seems like he just gets kinder. Of course, I've never known him not to be kind, he seems to get more understanding of the gospel than he ever has before. So whatever this disease could possibly do to a person in a negative way, mentally and emotionally, it has failed to do it to him in any negative way whatsoever. He seems to be getting sharper. All of the most treasured attributes that somebody could seek after throughout their religious life or pious life of any kind.
He's not getting better looking. In the month since I was down there last, mate, perhaps I should just leave it there. He's not getting better looking.
Yeah, but look who's saying it.
Hey, I want to give a shout out to his whole family. This man has, by his own confession, he says, I wasn't always the best husband and father, but his two kids, Jonah and Daniel, and his wife, Erin, I want to tell you something. This family is the kind of family I wish I could call him daddy. I'd love to be part of a family like this. I wasn't, but it's just these people that take care of him, his carers, are just extraordinary people. Gospel or no gospel, yeah. They live on love.
That's wonderful. So, yeah, Sean may get very fed up with us gushing over him, but it's the only thing that I can get when I talk about him, so.
Except in his looks. You know, his middle name is Handsome. Man, was his parents ever misguided calling him Handsome.
I was an empty vessel. You filled me up inside. And with amazing grace, restored my pride. Pretty amazing grace is how you saved me. And with amazing grace, reclaim my heart. Love in the midst of chaos, calm in the heat of war. Showed with amazing grace what love was for.
I started reading in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. And this is on the heels of our last show. Of the things that we said about support of the gospel. And everybody knows that this is not an easy thing for me to do. They know that I fail miserably. I had somebody on the phone just the other day, and they were telling me that they want to make a contribution to the ministry of $50 a week. Now, that's a substantial gift to the ministry. They also wanted to give a good one-time gift also. So all of this happening at the same time.
Wow.
And
Was this after last week?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I would be chastised 40 Ways to Sunday by every gospel revolutionary. Of course, then I said, well, you know, that's a lot to commit to. I said, and you're saying you want us to take this out of your cart every week? And he said, yes, every week. And I said, well, are you sure that you are settled in and you can afford this? Well, yeah, I can do it. Are you sure that there's not some need that your kids have? You know, you got kids and we don't want your kids going without. And I did everything I could do to talk him out of it. And then I realized, just kind of broke down. I told him, I said, well, I said, I think you see why people don't like me doing this at all. After that phone call, I'd actually started going through these verses. Dom, we're going to go into 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 1. And I want to lay to rest the whole issue of giving from a gospel perspective. Giving from a means of grace and exposing all the other motivations that are used to coerce people into giving.
Now, let's just step back a minute. We are in the second week of a pledge drive.
Yep.
Okay, let's see how good you are at doing what you say you can do.
Well, We do not know that it is going to increase what comes in, but what it will do is clarify why we do what we do, and it'll sharpen what we do.
I hope it makes you a better salesman.
I think that it will give the folks a clearer view as to why they give the way they give. Because we've got some very committed people doing this, and I want them to understand especially. This message is as much for those who are already giving as it would be for those that are even thinking about giving us support financially. This is a nonprofit corporation. Nonprofit corporations operate based on contributions. We are suggesting to you that before you give to anyone, that you do your research. Find out who's at the head. Find out if they're driving Rolls Royces and Bentleys, and their sole job is to be the CEO of the company. You might want to think twice about where your money's going to.
There are ways that you can research on the web how many cents in every dollar hit the ground running.
Mm-hmm,
and that, if anything, is probably the most honest way of researching it.
Yeah. So as we go through this, I just want to build confidence because it certainly did in me. I can tell you that this gave me a lot of liberty by going through this chapter. If we have time, we're going to cover a chapter also in 2 Corinthians. By comparing 1 Corinthians to 2 Corinthians subject per subject, you can learn a lot. So we're going to start in 1 Corinthians. Don, you want to read through this for us, and as we go, we will, where we need to, stop and pull out finer points here. 1 Corinthians chapter 9.
Verse 1. Am I not an apostle? Am I not free? Have I not seen Jesus Christ, our Lord? Are you not my work in the Lord?
One of the first things that we learn here is that Paul is asserting his testimony here in that he's seen the Lord too. What, not just the disciples, but the only time that Paul would have spent time with Jesus would have been in the record in the book of Acts about him, he and Jesus spending 3 years together after the resurrection out in the desert learning the gospel.
Even if I am not an apostle to others, doubtless, though, I am to you. For the seal of my apostleship are you in the Lord.
Mm-hmm. So Paul is admitting here, he seems to have a burr in his saddle here. And he's saying, you know, am I not an apostle? Am I not a free man? Have I not been freed by this gospel? Paul spoke of his freedom on different levels, his freedom as a Roman citizen and also his freedom in the gospel. He's saying, I've seen Jesus. Are you not the results of my work? And he said, I may not be an apostle to everyone, but don't tell me I'm not an apostle to you. Because the results of the work is obvious that I am an apostle to you. So, Don, let's keep reading through this.
My answer to them that do examine me is this.
Okay, so now we get down to the crux of the matter. Paul does have a burr in his saddle, and he is being questioned by some people. Now, the interesting thing that about this, and I'm going to be doing more research into this, into before and afterward, but, you know, chapter 8 is all about eating or not eating things offered to idols. That's what all of chapter 8 is. In fact, it starts out that way in chapter 8. Now, it's touching things offered unto idols. We know that we all have knowledge. Knowledge puffeth up, but charity or love edifieth. And if any man thinks he knows anything, he knows nothing yet as he ought to know it. Paul said, anybody that says he knows something doesn't know it good enough, no matter what he knows.
You might know somebody, don't know all.
Yeah, and you know, that's a good gospel revolutionary statement. We know some things, but no matter what we know, we don't know enough.
There's still more to learn.
There's still more to learn. So we're continuing. So he goes through this whole thing about meat being offered to idols and for conscience sake and whether to do it. You're completely free to eat something offered to an idol, which is in stark contrast with the book of Revelation, where that Jesus is ready to throw everybody away completely because they've eaten things offered unto idols. Paul taught that it's quite all right to eat things that are offered to idols.
Well, he didn't just say it once. He said it twice. If Romans 14 mm-hmm. is to be credited to Paul, he says it again there.
Yes, he does. And so he comes out of this chapter saying, wherefore, if meat make thy brother to offend, I will eat no flesh while the world standeth, lest I make my brother to offend. So he comes out of this chapter by examining things we do and don't do based on what is profitable for people to hear.
And what edifies people or what builds up other people.
What builds them up and what offends some other people.
Sounds like love to me.
Yes, and he is going through this in great detail. And he's making sure that, number one, you're completely free to eat meat offered to an idol. However, if my brother is offended by that, he said, I won't eat meat again as long as the world stands. So he's giving us his heart that regardless of what the rules say, regardless of what is permitted, regardless of what is instructed, you still have to follow your heart. You still have to live in consideration to those who are around you. Paul, in this context, has also said, to the Jew, I become as a Jew, to the Gentile, I become as a Gentile. I become all things to all men that I might by all means win some.
He, in fact, invented the term, when in Rome, do as the Romans. I mean, we use it to this day, but mm-hmm. he's the first one I remember ever reading that actually said that.
Yeah, actually said that, yeah. So people don't realize they're universally around the world, they are still quoting Paul. So I just wanted you to see this is the mindset. Paul is coming out of this 1 Corinthians chapter 8. Obviously, there are people bringing accusation against him because of his teachings about offering, about eating meat offered to idols. This is Paul in most of this letter teaching and saying, this is my response to those who criticize me about these matters. So he just cleared up the whole issue about whether or not you should eat meats offered to idols. He has made it very clear. Anybody can go read there. Yes, you can. Is Paul going to exercise that freedom just because he can? No, he's not. So that heart is what we're listening to as we go into this.
Verse 2 there, my answer to them that examine me is this. Now, that word examine in the English is an insipid word compared to what the Greek word was. The Greek word means to judge or to critically examine, not just examine, but to examine with a view to criticizing.
Yeah.
The word krino is part of the root of this. Another part in Corinthians, he says, if you don't judge yourself before you take communion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that word is krino. In fact, it's katakrino, which means super judging. But he says, my answer to them, that examine me with a view to judging me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the secondary, according to James Strong, so secondary meaning of that word is to investigate or interrogate, which is kind of exactly what the Sanhedrin did to Jesus. The high priest did to Jesus before they threw him away to the Romans. Now, I want just to really underline this.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I have an answer to the people who want to critically judge me, and this is it.
And this is it. And I just wonder who those people are that he is making reference to. Wouldn't it be wonderful if he just named them and we wouldn't have to wonder?
Well, let's look at James Strong's dictionary meaning and firstly scrutinize. Who scrutinized him? You hear the word scrutinize, investigate, interrogate, determine. Who in Acts 15 and again in Acts 21 scrutinized, investigated? Remember, we went through Acts 21.
Yeah.
And there were people who reported back on Paul to the church at Jerusalem. They investigated, no question about that. And then James in chapter 21 interrogates him.
Mm-hmm.
And then came to a determination. He determined something. He judged him and said, well, if you're really a Jew, I mean, he didn't use these words.
Mm-hmm.
He'd hung around Jesus long enough to get, you know, the Christianese down right, to get the verbalese down right. But he said, if you're really a Jew, then you'd do this.
And in every case where they were scrutinizing him and judging him critically was pertaining to law and grace, his commitment to the law of Moses. And he said, as we are falsely criticized, that we're saying you ought to go around doing bad, that good may come from it.
Hmm.
So we have all of those statements as to who, but, you know, it's sad that we don't have it right here in this chapter exactly who he's talking about, but let's read on anyway.
Wouldn't that be interesting? And so he says, here is my answer to these people. Do we not have power to eat and to drink? Now, exousia is the word. You can use privilege. Don't we have the privilege of eating and drinking? Don't we have the power to lead about a sister, a wife, as well as other apostles?
Wow.
Yeah. I wonder who they are. Do we not have the privilege to lead about a sister, a wife, as well as other apostles, and as the brother of the Lord and Peter?
The brother of the Lord. You know, this term he used many times. We know who the brother of the Lord was.
Mm.
Now, the King James says brethren. But this Greek word is brother, the brother of the Lord. Now, that would be just the Greek of it. But the fact of it is, if he's not talking about a certain person, wouldn't Cephas or Peter be the brethren of the Lord also? So you see, by his own delineation, he is speaking about two different people here, not a group of people plus Peter, because Peter would fit in that same group. He's talking about two individuals, and that is James and Peter. Now, Don, what I want you to do here is look at the word sister. Why would anybody want to lead about their sister?
Well, maybe you could sell her cheap or something. I don't know. A sister. Let's have a look at a sister is Adelphi. It's it is the feminine of Adelpho, mm-hmm. or Adelphoi, if you like, which is a plural. But
it's basically just a girl.
Well, it is the gender opposite of a brother.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Strong's wants to have it a sister in the Lord. That's stretching it a bit.
That is stretching it a great deal.
I mean, if it said in the Lord, that'd be fine.
Yeah, it's just not there, though.
And when he says Adelphos later in the same verse, as he defines it by saying of the Lord. So he could have just as easily said a sister in the Lord.
Yeah. Do we not have the power to lead about a woman or a wife? Now, the word wife, what does that mean? Does it mean always a married situation?
No, it could be a woman, but its primary purpose is a wife.
Right.
Yep, it's a gune. Let me just check another version.
And tell me what lead about means. What is this? I mean, has he got a collar on him? I mean, what?
No, he's trying to crack onto him. He's trying to, I think he's, isn't that when you woo a woman?
That's what I'm asking.
Lead him on? Is he leading them on or leading them about? Yeah. That's what I want to know. I can think of a couple I led on, but should I say that? I don't think so.
Do we not have the power or the freedom
to lead about a woman?
To lead about a woman, as Peter and James are doing.
Exactly. So Peter and James, A, they're married. We knew that about Peter, and we have another reference to James being married in Acts. So, A, they're married, and B, it sounds like they've got a chick on the side.
Well, we don't know that for sure, but the fact of it is...
I'm telling you, mate. I don't know about that.
He is definitely making reference to them and saying, we've got the same right that they do.
What he's saying is, whatever they do, we can't do the same?
Yeah.
And it is as well as other apostles.
Yes.
So this is not as well as other teachers like Apollos or Barnabas or Luke or Mark. Maybe Mark. But it's other apostles. So other apostles are carting about their main course and a side salad, a wife and a sister. And he says, what, we can't do the same?
Yeah, so here comes the comparisons. This is what I have to say to those that are examining me. You guys have women, wives or otherwise, and we have as much right to do that as you do. And then verse 6, let's go on from there, Don.
Now, this is an interesting verse. Or do only I and Barnabas... Well, in the King James, it says, or I only and Barnabas have not we power to forbear working. Now, I love this verse, mate. What he's saying, that word forbear means not to do something. You could, this should be translated, or a Barnabas are I the only ones who got to go out and work for a living?
Yes.
Do you get to do nothing while we're...
Yep.
Good Lord. So they were doing like the modern preachers and taking their wives and their women with them. And he's saying sarcastically, what, we can't do the same thing? Dang.
Yeah. Now begins a list of things. The thing that I want to tell you what I'm going to tell you is this. And gonna show you what I'm gonna show you is this. And you're going to find that every verse used by every church in the world comes from Paul about coercive giving.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm sorry about that, but that's just the facts. They are out of Paul's letters, but they are not out of Paul's teachings.
Well, it's like the dialectic in Paul. You know, you take one verse and make the whole theology about that one verse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now this is quite dialectic in its style. Just the same as, Paul is the one that said it is unnatural for a man to be with a man and a woman to be with a woman. But that wasn't the last thing he said about it. He also said it's unnatural for a person to be circumcised to the Jews. He also told the Gentiles by chapter 11 in Romans, it's unnatural for you to be grafted in, as you say, falsely. I just wish the church world knew that teaching was completely false. The entire church world teaches that the Jews were cut off and the Gentiles grafted in. And they get all of that from Paul's teaching, but it's where Paul was teaching against it.
So they take it from Paul's teachings and not from his conclusions.
Exactly. Thank you. So we're going to see if that is happening here. Now, what this is going to do for you folks was what it did for me. It set me free about the issue of giving, about support for the ministry. We want you to know clearly why we do what we do pertaining to finances and why you do what you do pertaining to finances for the gospel and Mike Williams Ministries. So, Don, let's start reading some of these. He actually starts right here in verse 7.
Who goes to war at any time out of his own pocket? Now, I'll read this in the King Jimmy. Who goeth a warfare any time at his own charges? Who planteth a vineyard and eateth not the fruit thereof? Or who feedeth a fly? I would have done well in the Shakespearean Theatre in London. And eateth not of the milk of the flock. So he says, who goes to war at any time out of his own pocket?
Uh-huh. Number one.
Who plants a vineyard and doesn't eat the fruit?
Number two.
Who feeds a flock and doesn't drink the milk?
Number three. So we have three things that Paul has laid down here that are used to collect money. Number one, who, and the word warfare there is actually making reference to ministry. Who goes out and does all of this at any time using his own money?
Mm-hmm.
Who does that?
Mm-hmm.
They take that and say, who goes out and does ministry, warfare is the word that is used here, at any time at his own charges. Now, we learned that word charges in the book of Acts. Remember where they told Paul to go join the others who were going through the purification rites and to take charges for them.
Acts 21, yes.
And that means to take on payment. So that's exactly what this word means. Who does this and pays for it out of his own pocket? Well, I know Paul did. I know I have. I know you heard last week Don Bartlett did it. So we disobeyed Paul here. Who does that? Now let's stay with context. The next one is, who plants a vineyard and eats not of the fruit of it? This is the second concept that Paul is presenting here, and you've heard it many times that you know, man, we've planted all of this and now we're going to reap all this money back from you. Number one, that's completely out of context. And when Paul's talking about sowing and reaping in the context of money, it's not that you reap money for sowing money in the ministry. You reap ministry for sowing money in ministry. He goes into that later on in 2 Corinthians. You see, our mind is fixed to think the way we've been taught to think. That if you sow sparingly, you will reap sparingly. If you sow bountifully, you'll reap bountifully. You see, Oral Roberts told us that was about money. And we're still stuck there. But the context of these verses is that if you sow bountifully in a ministry that or someone that's sharing the gospel, you're going to reap a whole lot of gospel. There's going to be a whole lot of gospel coming out of it. It's not that money is seed. That's one of the biggest deceptions that ever has hit Christianity, is that money is seed. So that's two of them. And then the last one, or who feeds a flock and doesn't take the milk of the flock? Who's not going to drink the milk from the goat that he's feeding? All very natural things, right? This is just the way things are. Now, let's continue on, though, to verse 8. Now, does everybody recognize all three of these as means by which you have been coerced to give money? I know you have. I know that you've heard each of these, and you've heard. And if you've heard them, guess whose writing you heard them out of? You heard them out of Paul's teaching. So, Don, when you're ready there, let's go on with verse 8.
Now, am I just talking like any old person, or am I actually not quoting the law? In the King James, it says, say I these things as a man, or saith not the law the same also?
Yeah, a strange comment from a man who teaches us we're freed from the law, right?
Yeah. He says, I'm not just sounding off because I'm irritated. This is all written in the scriptural law.
It's all in the law. And then he quotes one of the laws that you've heard. If you've heard the other three reasons, you've heard this one a million times.
The message does it so, sweetie. For it's written in the law of Moses, you shall not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treads out the corn. Does God take care for oxen? Now, let me read you that out of the message, Michael.
Okay.
Moses wrote, don't muzzle an ox to keep it from eating the grain when it's threshing. Do you think Moses' primary concern was the care of farm animals? Beautiful sarcasm.
Well, man, I tell you what, we've got it nailed down. Because even the law says, don't muzzle the ox that treads out the corn. We know that God wasn't talking about farm animals. He was talking about people in the ministry. So what is your argument here, Mike? What are you doing so far? This is number four reason that is used by Christian ministries around the world to coerce money from people. Well, we have this real nasty habit in the gospel revolution of read a little further. Let's keep reading.
Or says he it altogether for our sakes? For our sakes, no doubt, this is written, that he that ploughs should plough in hope, and he that threshes in hope should be a partaker of his hope. Let me just read you that in a little bit more modern English. So if we have planted spiritual seed among you, is it out of line to expect a meal or two from you? Don't you think his concern extends to us? Was he only concerned about farm animals, or don't you think his concern extends to us? Of course, farmers plow and thresh, expecting something when the crop comes in.
Yeah, now that is verse 11, I think.
That was verse 10 and verse 11.
Verse 10 and 11, yeah.
So we have planted spiritual seed among you. Is it out of line to expect a meal or two from you?
Yeah. All right. So now, it sounds pretty ironclad. You should be able to quote Paul on all of these things, right?
Why not? Yeah.
Well, goodness, we need to just pull out all the stops. We can quote Paul. Muzzle not the ox that treads out the corn. Who goes into ministry and does it out of his own pocket? Who plants a vineyard, going out sowing the seeds of the gospel?
Who milks a cow and doesn't drink it?
Yeah, the fruit and milk the cow and raise the cow, get the milk. Now he's quoted the law, muzzle not the ox that treads out the corn. And if we have sown spirit, now here's number five. For if we have sown spiritual things, is it a greater thing if we shall reap your carnal things? Should be expected.
Is it bad to expect a free feed out of you?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not wrong, people. It's in the law. Everybody's doing it. And you find out that in verse 12. What does that say, Don?
If others be partakers of this privilege,
and
the only other place he said others is when he's talked about James and Peter earlier.
Yeah.
But if others be partakers of this power over you,
yeah.
Remember what Jesus said, don't be like the Gentiles who want to lord it over you.
Over you.
Are not we rather deserving?
Now, here Paul has made a very audacious comparison to himself and to specifically James and Peter. Now, the context of this is here, folks. We're not reading this into this. We are forcing our minds to stay in context. The others, as Don just pointed out to you, have been named James and Peter. If James and Peter, of all people, in that word, power is exousia. Is that right?
Yes, but it also means privilege.
Yeah.
Exousia.
This privileged power.
I think he's talking about apostolic privilege, isn't he?
Yeah, he really is. He's speaking of apostolic privilege. Apostolic privilege pertaining to getting your money.
Getting your free feed, yeah.
Now, he says, but look at the comparison he makes. Now, if Peter and James have the power to do this
over you,
the power over you to do this, don't you think that we have even more power than they do? Now, it is not me who has brought this comparison in Paul's mind. Paul has spoken about these guys as those who seem to be pillars in the church. Paul has exposed these guys in so many ways in our study in the book of Acts. And now look what he's saying. If these dudes have the right to raise funds from you, compare that to us.
Let me put it in the modern parlance. If they can get away with it, why can't I?
Yes. And even more so, why shouldn't I?
Well, that's exactly what he says in the next phrase here.
And what is
that? Nevertheless, we have not used this privilege.
Oh. What did he say?
He said that they get away with it, but I have never used this privilege.
Wait. We just went through six things. The sixth one is sowing spiritual things. So we've got six reasons, six leverage points to take up money. Now, the guy who laid down these six leverage points for getting money out of your pocket said that Peter and James are doing it. The apostles are doing it. But now, what did he say there? I can't. Well, let's read verse 12. Let's read verse 12 again.
And I'm going to read it, if you'll allow me, in the Message.
What does it say?
We have planted spiritual seed among you. Is it out of line for us to expect a meal or two from you? That's verse 11. Verse 12, others demand plenty from you in these ways. Don't we, who have never demanded, deserve even more?
Wow.
But we're not going to start demanding now what we've always had a perfect right to.
Wow.
Our decision all along has been to put up with anything rather than to get in the way or detract from the message of Christ. We're going to come back to that in the King James because it's much more powerful in the King Jimmy. And he says, verse 12, come to me, you bugger. He says, nevertheless, we have not used this privilege, but suffer all things, lest we should hinder.
Yep.
The gospel of Christ.
If I use these six means of taking up money that the others are using, I will be doing the same thing they are doing. They are hindering the gospel of Christ. I refuse to use what is rightfully within my power to do.
Family, do you see that what we're doing today is we are reading this in context and bringing out exactly what Paul writes here in ways that probably you never have. The reason you've never done it is because it wasn't preached this way.
Nope. You got verses out of context. Nobody's ever read this chapter to you before. I've never read it to you before in context. I read it in context just last week. You would never run out of people standing up and using one, two, or all six points to extort money from people's pockets that the writer who has declared these methods has said, I don't use them because if I use them, they hinder the gospel of Christ.
What about the seventh point?
Well, number seven is coming up, I think. So, hey, he's not done yet. You know, this would have been a mouthful if he would have just covered this, named six proofs of means to get money out of people. They do quote Paul. I agree. But they do not follow the teachings of Paul on these subjects. Because I'm sorry I'm repeating, folks, but you got to get it. When I first spoke to Don about this last week, I read through it, and he said, "Mate, you're going to have to lead me through this one." I thought, "No, you're supposed to be as excited about this as I am." But I tell you what, folks,
I am now. I am now.
Now he's dragging me. So, but that's just how. That's why we need to repeat this to you, is because this will be the first time in your ears. I don't care who you are. If somebody can write us and tell us that they saw this before, please write us and tell us, because I'd like to listen to the rest of your material, that you have seen that these six things, which you have used and had used on you, that Paul actually made the statement, "I never use it." Now, he didn't just say, "I don't use it, so I'm better than them." He told us why he doesn't use it.
Because
it will hinder the gospel. Now, what does the word hinder mean? Don, can you look at that?
I sure can.
What does it do to the gospel to use these points to get money out of people?
It means it's a roadblock, as good as a roadblock. Enkope is the Greek word. It's as good as coming up on a roadblock with the police there and you can't get past it.
My. Well, all right. All we can do is see what verse 13 says, I guess.
Well, actually, you know, you could look at the fruit. Always look at the fruit. Christianity is a $600 billion a year industrial complex in North America alone, of which 0.1% of all the monies collected in churches in North America make it to people who've never heard the name Jesus Christ. Is this kind of thing a roadblock to the gospel? I say join your own dots.
Boy, I tell you what, it looks to me like the picture's there. And we'll get into this probably next week, because we want this to really settle into you. But we'll get into the part where Paul actually says, he also makes the statement, so if you sow sparingly, you'll reap sparingly. And he's talking about supporting ministry. But folks, we have to get past the false assumption, because Paul's already told us in this verse, he don't use this.
You can't even get your words out. You're so excited. The word
I know.
It's false assumptions, I think you were.
Oh, what did I try to say?
Yeah, you said the false assumptions. It was very good. It was vintage Williams.
Well, if it was that good, let's leave it there.
I think we shall. The next verse, verse 13. Now here is where he raises the seventh legal reason.
He's got more.
Apparently, yeah. He's on a spin here. Don't you know that they which minister about holy things live from the proceeds of the temple?
Oh, so that one is number seven?
That's number seven.
He's saying, now you already know this, folks. Do you not know that they which minister about holy things live by proceeds of the temple? So if you're working at the temple, you get the money that comes into the temple.
That's it. In fact, the word of the things of the temple is ek, meaning out of. So they who minister holy things live out of the temple.
That was number seven. Well, is there any more?
There couldn't possibly be. I mean, seven's a perfect number. Ain't that enough for you? Oh, hang on. And they which wait at the altar are partakers with the altar.
Now, this is having to do with the animal sacrifices, right?
They used to eat the fat. Remember, it was given to the priest to eat.
Exactly.
Good Lord.
Absolutely. So now that is number eight.
Oh, I can't wait for 9, 10, and 11.
So we have eight different ways that Paul has laid out.
And it's not just eight different ways. It's eight different ways ordained by no less than God himself, for crying out loud. I mean, this is the law. Yeah. Look at verse 14. Even so has the Lord ordained.
Yes.
I mean, this is not just me making it up. This is the Lord ordained this little lot.
Not just the law, but the Lord. So let's keep reading. Verse 14.
Even so hath the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel should live out of the gospel.
My God, there's nine things.
Dang.
Now, I was wondering how many there were. I didn't count them before we got started. But
well, in that little one-room schoolhouse in East Tennessee, I know that it was,
So we can compare this to the the nine.
I love the way you just ignore me.
So we can compare this to the nine. How could we spiritualize the word number nine? There's nine.
No, that was 10 virgins. There was nine.
Gifts of the Spirit, fruits of the Spirit.
There's a song about this. There was 10 for the 10, da 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 da, and 2, 1 is a baby in Bethlehem.
I don't know.
I think it's the partridge in the pear tree.
Oh, Lord.
I think that's the song we're after here, Mike.
All right. So, anyway, nine reasons. So, but now Paul has already said, now he didn't use the six reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, these six I don't use because it would hinder the gospel. And he is implicating the disciples as hindering the gospel.
Yes.
By using these ploys to take up money. Right?
Yep.
All right. Now, we've had him state nine things. You've got every validation you need. The law says it. The Lord says it.
Is there anything else that could have legalized this and made it right? No wonder the people who hung around with Jesus for 3 years and were still thoroughly absorbed in the law, totally, proof positive of that is in Acts chapter 21 when James says, hey, listen, go and sacrifice a couple of lambs, Paul, and pay for these other dudes to for their lambs. They were like ink in a piece of chalk. They had so much of the law in them, they could not see past the law. Along comes Paul, spends 3 years of his own with Jesus, knocked blind. I mean, there's nothing like having scales put on your eyes to make you realize that, that'll spoil your weekend, won't it?
Yes.
So now all of those, so Paul comes along and I think you wanted to go to verse 15, but I just, I don't know, mate. You're just carrying me away here.
So anybody that preaches the gospel should live in the gospel. Now, we're going to take up an offering right now. Now, folks, I'm telling you, you've heard it straight out of the mouth of Paul. Jesus, Moses, Paul, how many more do you need that we've got the authority to take money? We've got the authority, the power, the right to ask you, and you can do nothing but submit.
And if you send this one time, $1,000 offering, we will send you waters from the Jordan. We will send you this holy oil that will, once you put it on your dog, it will never have fleas again. Praise Jesus. Hallelujah.
Or you can buy that at the pet store, either one.
I'd rather you buy ours because ours is anointed.
And ours is $1,000.
Yeah, it's got to work.
Now, should we read one more verse?
What the hell? I mean, hasn't he said it all already?
Well, you would think.
Okay, well, read another.
Let's read one more.
But I have used none of these nine things.
Oh, my gosh. I thought it was just the six he didn't use. And then he was going to tell us the ones he does use.
Neither have I written these things.
Oh, what?
To say it should be done that way.
And I've not even written that it should be done this way. Whoa. So the guy that every ministry quotes as saying it should be done this way said in those verses, I don't do it this way, and I have never written anything that says it should be done this way.
What he's actually saying here is, I've given you 9 perfectly good reasons. Using the law, using the Lord, using everything that's good and proper and you should bloody do it, I've given you 9 perfectly perfect reasons.
Even common sense would tell you these things.
You would think. I mean, doesn't the guy who milks the cow deserve some of the milk? But I have not used one of these things because it will hinder the gospel. And what's more, I'm damned if I'm going to tell you that I've written these things so that you would think I want it done this way unto me. No.
Wow. So not only have I used none of these 9 things, I've never even written to you that these 9 things ought to be done. And I've never told you that it should be done unto me.
Well, what other option is there? I mean, if you don't do it that way, I mean...
Well, my goodness, if you're not going to coerce money out of people, you're not going to use these 9. I mean, you know, we're sitting here with 9 cards in our hand to play at any time, and suddenly you have no cards in your hand.
On a game we only need 8 for...
We only need one. We only need one. For it were better for me to die. I'm deeply moved, Don. I've not understood my own heart in these matters. I hadn't understood it. You guys hadn't understood me either. I mean, when it comes to me doing pledge drives, the greatest dread this staff had was me doing it. Because they know I'm going to make sure none of these 9 things are used. I didn't know these 9 things were there to not be used. This is basically the list that I go down to make sure that people aren't giving for these reasons. I didn't understand, Don, I didn't understand my own heart about raising money to support the men. I didn't understand my own heart. Why is this so hard?
Family, do you remember all the times that Michael and others here have said, follow your heart?
Yep.
Are you starting to see why?
Yeah. And I tell you what, I don't know.
This is where you say words fail me, because it sure is sounding like that from this end.
Well, of course, it is obvious that words are failing me now. Rare, but real at this moment. I'd rather die. I've never understood why this passion has been in me so strongly about not using any coercion. We make a list longer than Paul's.
Well, we've had a couple of thousand more years to do it, mate.
And I think this, not only does this touch my heart very deeply, I think it is going to give those of you who do and are thinking about putting money into Mike Williams Ministries and the Gospel Revolution a complete resolve as to why you're doing it. There's nothing like finding where your heart is and why you do things better than making a list of the reasons why you are not doing them for. We've allowed Paul to do what only Paul seems to be able to do, in a dialectic way. He's told you two times, I don't do this. He's told us who does do it. We now understand why that Christianity relies so heavily on the doctrines of Peter, James, and John, while reaching into Paul's letter and pulling out in the most diabolical and underhanded way, out of context, his comments about giving and using them against billions of people around the world. I've been asked so many times, why don't I do this? Mike, why don't you do that? I've never been able to explain the passion that I feel about this. Has it been hard? Yeah. Is it hard? Yeah, it's hard right now. Rather than use any of these Moses declared logical and reasonable reasons to try to motivate people to give, there's no man's words who describe. Basically, I found myself, Don. I found myself because nobody's ever been able to put it in the words that I feel so passionately as to say, I'd rather die than to do it that way. We love you guys. If any one of us were millionaires, if any one of us had $1 billion, if any one of us had enough money to sustain ourselves with any left over, there would be no fund drives from the gospel. I don't care which one of us it was. If it was Don that came into money, this ministry wouldn't be raising money. If it was me, if it was Glenn, if it was Nardos, if it was Owen, for God's sakes. Owen has been a part of the gospel revolution now for just a handful of months. If he came into money, we wouldn't be asking at all. That would be our glory. That would be our crowning achievement, is to never, ever bring up the subject again. But at this point, we have to. But if we're going to, we're going to follow the heart of the person who has inspired this gospel in our hearts, and that's the man Paul. A man who spent a large portion of his time persecuting the church, laid down his own robe at the stoning of Stephen, confirming and affirming his approval of this, if not being the one who actually instigated it. This same man who has in such an artful way. I think we should all feel honored that we have discovered Paul's art and the magnificence of his ability to bring any subject to such a firm conclusion. And just be thankful. Goodness, I'm grateful. I'm thankful for the 3 years that he got to spend with Jesus after his resurrection. Oh, how thankful I am for those 3 years of learning. How thankful I am. There is no way, if I lived 100 lifetimes, I doubt that my integrity could possibly measure against this man, Paul. But I want you to know that you've got a group of people here who'd lay down their lives for you. They would do whatever it takes to try to get help to you. And if it were within our financial means, my goodness, what we would be doing. Mm-hmm. What we do with, though, we do an amazing amount. We do an amazing amount. And I, number one, I feel nothing but gratefulness in my heart to be associated with everybody in the Gospel Revolution and everybody who has ever even thought about making a contribution to make this work more to where that we can get things done and to where that when we come up at the end of the quarter, I'm not scrambling to try to figure out how to make ends meet. Thank you.
Some years ago, a pastor with whom I was working, Pastor Norm, he and I were talking outside his house across the hood of his car, and he said to me, "Don, God gives you the sheep so that you can shear them."
Oh, my God.
Now, I read somewhere on our Facebook group just the other day, so now we're free, what can we do?
Yeah.
What do we do now? May I respectfully and humbly suggest you dip your hand in your pocket or do whatever you can. Maybe it's not cash. Maybe it's time. Maybe it's a gift you have. But can I suggest that you do whatever you can to extend the gospel? Anything you can to extend the gospel. When your phone rings this week, it'll be Michael on the other end. And so open with these words. "Oh, Michael, it's so good to hear from you." And then I'm pretty sure that Michael will be able to take it from there. And so it is, family and friends, that we must leave you. Remember, if you would like to partner with us and not just in money, call our office on
832-318-9339.
And speak to us about how you want to participate or go to www.gospelrevolution.com. It's right up there on the interwebs. And hit the connect link. Anything you can do to help the gospel can make all the difference for somebody else just like you starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. So now it's good night from myself, Don Bartlett, from the GR Studios right here in Eva, Alabama.
And it's good night from me, Mike Williams, Michael Lilburn Williams, as we like to say around here. And folks, we present ourselves to you as servants, not anyone that has anything over you whatsoever. We are your servants in the Lord. We are your servants in the gospel. We are here to give to you. We are here to support your efforts. We are here to, we don't do very good at counseling. None of us are good counselors, but we are good listeners. That is for sure. And, but if you got something that you want to do, pertaining to the gospel, that's why I got so excited when Sean told me he's going to put effort into going through this arduous trip to get to Calgary. And he only found out through this PowerCast that if he gets there, he's going to be speaking. So he said he just wanted to be in the room. He just wanted to come up and be in the room.
He's like Nardos was in the first visit.
Exactly, for sure. Thank you, guys.
We hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended does not mean you're right. I'm probably going to do less editing on this show than I've done on any other show in the last 5 years, and the reason is I just don't think anything needs to be cut or added. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
I bet better.
That was good, mate. Mm. We've only been recording for 1 hour 47.
Awesome.
And every bloody word was dripping with goodness.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you so much for...
I don't know what to say. I had so much fun. Thank you.
It was fun, and you're like me. You had never seen this chapter before. It's like it never existed. I mean, I knew the verses. I knew the 9 reasons, you know.
What self-incrimination is that?
Yeah.
Dang.
I mean, I knew all of these reasons and did not know the two most pivotal verses in the 15 verses. Didn't know them. Didn't know them. Never knew them. Up until last week, I didn't know they were there.
That was our cognitive bias at work, mate.
Yep.
Just blanked it out because it wasn't necessary.
It almost frightened me, Don, to realize that I did not know the... Don, it frightened me to know that I did not know those verses were here.
Well, let it encourage us, mate. Let it encourage us that there's a whole bunch more we've overlooked that's there for us.
I think it is, and we're gonna keep learning. And I really do hope that I think folks have come along to where that they understand that, you know, we are a learning ministry. And we are learning ministers as they are.
I hope so.
Because, you know, the joy of this is not nailing down our doctrines for me. The joy of this is learning constantly.
The day we stop learning, mate, I don't want to think about that.
Yeah, I don't even want to be here.
There you go. I'd rather die.
I'd rather die.
Bye-bye, my friend.
Bye.